Brihad, as the Supreme, Upalabdham, perceived, Etat, this world, Avayanti, they consider, Avasheshataya, in terms of its being the all-pervading foundation of existence, Yata, since, Udaya, the generation. Ashtamayo, and dissolution. Vikrite, of a transformation. Muri, of clay. Va, as if. Avikritat, the supreme itself. Not being subject to the transformation. Ata, therefore, Rishaya, the sages who compiled the Vedic mantras, Dadu, placed, Tvayi, in you, Mana, their minds, Vachana, words, Acharitam, and actions, Katam, how. Ayata, not as they are. Bhavanti, become. Bhuvi, upon the ground. Data, placed. Padani, the steps. Nirnam, of men. Translation. This perceivable world is identified with the Supreme because the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate foundation of all existence, remaining unchanged as all created things are generated from it and at last dissolved into it. Just as clay remains unchanged by the products made from itself and again merged with it. Thus it is toward you alone that the Vedic sages direct all their thoughts, words and acts. After all, how can the footsteps of men fail to touch the earth on which they live? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There may be some doubts as to whether the Vedic mantras are unanimous when identifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, some mantras state, Indru Jato Vashitasya Raja, Indra is the king of all moving and non-moving beings, Rigveda 132.15. While others say, Agnir Mudha Diva, Agni is the chief of all the heavens. And yet other mantras point to different deities as the absolute. It would seem then that the Vedas present a polytheistic worldview. Answering this doubt, the Vedas themselves explain in this verse that there can be only one source of universal creation, called Brahman or Brihat, the greatest, which is the singular truth underlying and pervading all existence. No finite deity like Indra or Agni can fulfill this unique role, nor would the Shrutis be so ignorant as to propose such an idea. As indicated here by the word Twayi, Lord Vishnu alone is the absolute truth. Indra and other demigods may be glorified in various ways, but they possess only those powers Lord Sri Vishnu has granted them. The Vedic sages understand that this entire world, including Indra, Agni, and everything else perceivable by the eyes, ears, and other senses, is identical with the one supreme truth, the personality of Godhead, who is called Brihat, the greatest, because he is Avavshesha, the ultimate substance that remains. From the Lord, everything expands as creation, and into him, everything dissolves into annihilation. He exists before and after the material manifestation as the constant basis, known to philosophers as the ingredient cause, upadana. Despite the fact that the countless manifestations emanate from him, the Supreme Lord exists eternally unchanged, an idea the Shrutis specifically emphasize here with the word avikrut. The word mudiva, as in the case of clay, alluded to a famous analogy spoken by Udalaka to his son Svetaketu in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.4.1. Vacharam bhavanam vikaro namadiyam vikritjeva satyam. The objects of the material world exist merely as names, transformations defined by language, whereas the ingredient cause, like the clay from which pots are made, is the actual reality. A mass of clay is the ingredient cause of various pots, statues, and so on, but the clay itself remains in essence unchanged. Eventually, the pots and other objects will be destroyed and returned to the clay from which they came. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the total ingredient cause, yet he remains eternally untouched by transformation. This is the purport of the statement, Sarvakam Kalvidam Brahma, everything is Brahman, Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1. Wondering at this mystery, the great devotee Gajendra prayed, Namo Namaste Kila Karanaya, Nishkaranaya Du Bhuta Karanaya. Obeisances again and again to you, the source of all creation. You are the inconceivable cause of all causes, and of you there is no other cause. Bhagavatam 8.3.15. Everybody still with me? Okay, still a couple of pages to go. Prakriti, material nature, is often considered the ingredient cause of creation in Western science as well as in the Vedas. This does not contradict the higher fact of the Supreme Lord being the final cause, since Prakriti is his energy and is herself subject to change. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.24.19, Lord Krishna says, Prakritir yasuparanam arara bhutusha para shatub bivyan jaka kalo brahmata triyayam tvaham. The material universe is real, having Prakriti as its original ingredient and final state. Lord Mahavishnu is the resting place of nature, which becomes manifest by the power of time. Thus nature, the almighty Vishnu, and time are not different from me, the supreme absolute truth. Prakriti, however, undergoes transformation, while her lord, the supreme Purusha, does not. Prakriti is the personality of Godhead's external energy, but he has another energy, his internal energy, which is Swarup Bhuta, non-different from his very essence. The Lord's internal energy, like himself, is never subject to material change. Therefore, the mantras of the Vedas, along with the along with the rishis who have received these mantras in meditation and transmitted them for the benefit of mankind, direct their attention primarily toward the personality of Godhead. The Vedic sages direct the activities of their mind and words, that is to say, the inner as well as the literal meaning, abhidha vritti, of their utterances, first of all toward him, and only secondarily towards separated transformations of prakriti such as Indra and other demigods. Just as a man's footstep, whether placed on mud, stone or bricks, cannot fail to touch the surface of the earth, so whatever the Vedas discuss within the realm of material generation, they relate to the absolute truth. Mundane literature describes limited phenomena, disregarding the relation of its subjects to the total reality. But the Vedas always focus their perfect vision on the Supreme. As the Chandogya Upanishad affirms in its statement, Mityaketyava Satyam and Sarva Kalvidam Brahma, reality is understood properly when everything is seen to be dependent on Brahman, the absolute for its existence. Brahman alone is not real, not because nothing we see in the world is real, but because Brahman is the absolute final cause of everything. Thus the word Satyam, as used in the phrase Mityaketyava Satyam, has been defined in another context as ingredient cause, by no less an authority than Lord Krishna himself. Yad upadaya purvastu mbhavu vikurute param adhir anto jata yasya tat satyam avidiyate. A material object itself, composed of an essential ingredient, creates another material object through transformation. In this way, one created object becomes the cause and basis of another created object. A particular thing may be called real in that it possesses the basic nature of another object that constitutes its cause and original state. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.24.18. Explaining the word Brahman, Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the word Brahman indicates the greatest of all and the maintainer of everything. The impersonalists are attracted by the greatness of the sky, but because of their poor fund of knowledge, they are not attracted by the greatness of Krishna. In our practical life, however, we are attracted by the greatness of a person and not by the greatness of a big mountain. Actually, the term Brahman can be applied to Krishna only. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna admitted that Lord Krishna is the Parabrahman, or the supreme rest of everything. Krishna is the supreme Brahman because of his unlimited knowledge, unlimited potencies, unlimited strength, unlimited influence, unlimited beauty, and unlimited renunciation. Therefore, the word Brahman can be applied to Krishna only. Arjuna affirms that because the impersonal Brahman is the effulgence emanating as rays of Krishna's transcendental body, Krishna is the Parabrahman. Everything is resting on Brahman, but Brahman itself is resting on Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the ultimate Brahman or Parabrahman. The material elements are accepted as inferior energies of Krishna because by their interaction, the cosmic manifestation takes place, rests on Krishna, and after dissolution again enters into the body of Krishna as his subtle energy. Krishna is therefore the cause of both manifestation and dissolution. In summary, Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Druhina vani ravindra mukhamara jagadidam nabhavet pritak avotitam bahu mukher api mantra ganarya jastva mura murti atovini gadasye. The demigods headed by Shiva, Agni, Surya and Indra, indeed, all beings in the universe do not come into existence independently of you. The mantras of the Vedas, though they speak from various viewpoints, all speak about you, the unborn Lord, appearing in numerous forms. Translation again. This perceivable world is identified with the Supreme, because the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate foundation of all existence, remaining unchanged as all created things are generated from it and at last dissolved into it, just as clay remains unchanged by the products made from it and again merged with it. Thus it is toward you alone that the Vedic sages direct all their thoughts, words and acts. After all, how can the footsteps of men fail to touch the earth in which they live? Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshu Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in this particular chapter, the prayers of the personified Vedas, seeks to establish the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. As we know in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Eti Chamsa Kalapum Sham Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. This is a famous verse in which Krishna is identified as the original source of everything. And it describes just as one candle is lit by another candle. So Krishna is that original candle which lights all other candles. In the Western science, there's the philosophy of what came first, the chicken or the egg, and which occupies the minds of the Western philosophers as they try to understand this difficult situation. In Buddhism, they have what are called koans. A koan is a statement which makes no logical sense. So the same thing is there, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? If you try to understand the material world from our material experience, it is difficult. If you try to understand Krishna like that, it is even more difficult, because Krishna is beyond this material world. Krishna has no origin. He has no source. He is unborn, eternal. From him everything emanates. And you can find many verses in the Shastras which describes this. Krishna describes, I'm the source of all material and spiritual things. Everything emanates from me. Similarly, Krishna describes that before me there was nothing. Sun, the moon, the stars. Everything Krishna says comes from me. So to make such a statement is either very vain or it is very true. Just like I remember when I first read Bhagavad Gita, I used to like the verses that always started off, when Krishna was talking about himself, about Krishna's qualities, how he's so great. And it's natural, because anybody who comes to this material world has the same type of inclination to be like that. We would like to be thinking that, oh, I am the source of everything. Everything emanates from me. Because we're trying to attract the attention of others to ourselves rather than attracting the attention to Krishna. Because the meaning of a servant is a person who serves. It's not that while he's serving, he's trying to get the person he's serving to look at him and say, oh, what a wonderful person you are. No, he's just trying to do the service so that that person can get on with whatever they're doing. It's not like he's, you know, sometimes they have this thing where somebody's trying to get famous and they try to do something for somebody so that they'll be noticed. In the story of Ramanujacharya, isn't it? There's a story how this preparation was cooked every day, some special type of saag or some special type of green vegetable for the king. And then one day the cook didn't turn up. So in that way the person was noticed. It's not that we're trying to do our service to Krishna like that. It's not that we're doing the aarti. Every day we're doing the aarti, you know, one day, 2 days, 1 week, 1 month. And then one day we just don't turn up. So that we think that, oh, they should notice us. They should notice me, that I've been doing this service all the time. And, you know, today I'm not going to do it, so Krishna is going to look for me. Right? Krishna's got to appreciate that I do this for him every day. Sometimes it can be like that we do something in the temple and we think that nobody appreciates what we're doing. We think, well, you know, nobody appreciates me, I'll just won't turn up today. And then let them see how they cope without me. Krishna's, he has everything. It's by his mercy that we're able to do anything. Krishna is known by the name Atmaram, a one who is self-satisfied within himself. He has nobody that he needs. If we were to think like that, that would be quite a lonely existence. Because man is a social creature. Mankind is a social creature. We need some interaction. And that interaction propensity comes from Krishna. Krishna also likes to interact with others. And the basis of the Krishna consciousness movement is how to develop that relationship with Krishna through the agency of service. Here in this particular translation and purport, of course, we're hearing about how God is the basis of everything. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. How Krishna says he's the basis of the Brahman, of that energy. Especially in the Rig Veda, because it's been quoted here. The Rig Veda specifically is a text, as you know, it's considered one of the four Vedas, Rig Veda, Samaveda, Yajurveda, and Atharva Veda. These were split by Vyasadeva. He split the actual original Veda into four sections. And then later on, those Vedas were again segregated into other texts, and different disciples received charge of those Vedas, like the custodians of them. So in the Rig Veda especially, it is basically a text in glorification of Indra. Western philosophers, when they first came across this, they thought that, yes, Indra is the supreme. This is what the people in this land are worshipping Indra as God. But we know that many people worship other demigods as well. Prabhupada mentions here Agni. Sometimes people worship Chandra, not so many. Sometimes people worship Brahma as the supreme. So in this particular purport, it is explained why this is not so. However, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna cautions us in trying to put down the demigods. And he cautions us also in disturbing the minds of those who are already worshipping the demigods. Of course, he explains that this is generally people who have some, he says, less intelligence, because they're worshipping the demigods for some material benefit. Whereas Krishna is not worshipped for material benefit. He's worshipped as the Supreme Lord, the giver of bhakti. And Krishna himself describes that bhakti mama vijananti javan jasjasmi tattvata tatvam tattvo gyatva vishati tatanantaram. That if one goes towards Krishna, one has to express some devotion. It's quite easy to follow the path of ritual. You'll find that in every religion there is ritual. It means, you know, this has to be offered in this way, and this has to be done in that way, at this time, at this constellation, like that. You'll find it in, you know, Christianity, you'll find it in Hinduism, you'll find it in many different religious processes. You'll find that there's ritual. And that ritual generally tends to keep people focused. That's the meaning of it. It keeps people focused on what they're supposed to be doing. But the ultimate goal of all that is to learn to love Krishna. It is not that by understanding so many different types of philosophy and so many different types of philosophical arguments that love will spring within our heart. We may be so intellectual that we know Srimad Bhagavatam backwards, forwards. And that's very good if we do. We should. But beyond that, there's a recognition that Krishna is a person. And all these things are there so that we can learn to love him, so that we can become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tamal Krishna Maharaj told me one time, Srila Prabhupada said to him that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is there just to convince our mind that Krishna is really God. Just to convince us that Krishna is actually God. All these books are just there just to convince us of that very fact. If you read Krishna book, you'll find that the gopis of Vrindavan, they were also very learned in philosophy, but it wasn't that they were reading the Shastra every day. They were actually implementing the Shastra every day. They were looking after Krishna. Mother Yashoda was cooking for Krishna, dressing him, chanting mantras for his protection. In this way, she was doing the practical application of everything that is there. Just like Krishna explains, that by all the Vedas I am to be known. Isn't it? He says, by all the Vedas I am to be known. What's the verse? You're all doing Bhakti Shastri? Start from the beginning. You're all doing Bhakti Shastri, right? So what's the verse? Very good. So by all the Vedas I am to be known. At least we have one Brahmana here. By all the Vedas I am to be known, Krishna says. So when we read these prayers of the personified Vedas, sometimes we used to joke in the Brahmacharya Ashram that, you know, this was, you know, somebody's got to read a chapter of the Krishna book. Somebody would say, okay, we're reading prayers of the personified Vedas. Oh. Because you practically know that, you know, 1-2 hours later you still be going. People are always looking for the shortest one. But I'm pretty sure prayers of the personified Vedas is the longest chapter in the Krishna book. Because here in this particular chapter, the supremacy of Krishna is established through philosophy, argument, reason. It is very special. And it is essential that devotees understand the arguments that are given. But ultimately beyond that, one can understand how Krishna is God. If we look around, it's described, yad yad vibhutit mat sattvam shrimam ujitam eva va tat tat eva taro tvam mamati jomsa sambhava. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everything glorious, mighty, beautiful that you see in this creation, he says, it's just a spark of my splendor. When we look around, sometimes we may go on holidays, we may go to some beautiful place, and we see the sunset, isn't it? Sometimes people go to Ayers Rock, take the photo of the sunset there, or they go to the ocean, see the sun rise in the morning. Very auspicious, you know. And it's very beautiful. We look at these things and we're overawed by the beauty of nature. We think, how wonderful is it? But Krishna describes, all these things that you see are just a spark of my splendor. This is nothing for me. For us, it's everything. We see something beautiful, we admire it. But to Krishna, he says, this material, that world, is just a perverted reflection. It is a perverted reflection. So the words of the Vedas are meant to incite our desire to somehow understand what is that ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is a person, first of all. When philosophers try to understand God, they speak of the Supreme, they speak of the ultimate energy, they speak of the light. They don't know how to understand that. Just like we find in Buddhism, people, they study it and they think that getting inner peace is very good. And their process of inner peace is the analysis of what's caused the suffering in this world. And they understand that activity causes reaction. So from that reaction, we get entanglement. So their philosophy is that if you stop all action, then you'll also stop all reaction. I remember one time at university, I asked when I was doing Buddhism course, I asked the lecturer, he was a big, big authority on Buddhism. He'd written so many books on this. Unfortunately, he was a chain smoker. He had to get out every 15 minutes of the lecture. But he was a practicing, you know, he was trying very hard to follow this path. But I said, he knew that I was a devotee. So I said to him, I said, well, what's the goal of everything? You know, how would you encapsulate the essence of Buddhism? What's the perfection of Buddhism? And he said, And then he said, it's like when a candle goes out. I said, gee, that's terrible. I said, what happens to me? He goes, you just go out. You just disappear. So this type of statement is actually very symptomatic of the frustrations of people in this modern age. People are suffering so much that they wish that their life would just go out, that everything would just disappear, that everything would just, you know, the anxieties that they feel, that they would just go away. In Krishna consciousness, when we take to it, we confront those things head on. Everybody has some baggage that they're carrying around with them from this life, from previous lifetimes. We have some baggage. It's called karma. That baggage has been going with us lifetime after lifetime. And we carry it around as if it's our most sacred treasure. We think this is really our treasure, that I have this body and this intelligence that I have and this money that I have and the good looks. And, you know, we think this is our real treasure. We look at ourselves in the mirror and we think, wow, you're so fantastic, you know. We try to think positive. We go to a seminar and, you know, we pay $3,000 for the guy to tell us that, you know, you just got to believe in yourself. You're the best. Don't let anybody stand in your way. If somebody stands in your way, just, you know, kick them out. You are it. As David Maharaj always quotes this, the slogan of the American Army, an army of one. Yes, you are it. So this type of mentality is the furthest from Krishna consciousness that it could possibly be. Because Krishna consciousness means to recognize that there is differentiation in this world. Ananda Maharaj mentions here in the purport. Parashya Shakti Vividhaya Shruyati. The Lord has multifarious different types of energies. So many different types of energies. We look at just one, we look at this material world, and we think, wow, this is really far out. But actually Krishna has, you know, the material energy, he has the spiritual energy, you know, he has his pleasure potency. So many different types of energy Krishna has. And he manifests them in such a way that it increases his enjoyment. Of course, someone may ask, what's the purpose of this material world? But the material world also has a purpose. Its purpose is to make us recognize that there is a higher reality that I want to go to. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains, Chatur Vidha Bhajanti Mam Gyana Sukhita Arjuna Arta Jignasa Arta Tigyani Cha Bharatashpa, that there are four different types of people who surrender to Krishna. So some people come to Krishna because of their frustration with the material world. Maybe some of us can identify with that. That we've had some experience which has made us look for something else. We think, is this really it? Maybe we've lost a loved one, or maybe we experienced some calamity at work, or there's countless permutations of this. So we may have come and looked for Krishna that way, or we may have come because we're, you know, very intellectual and we've been, you know, contemplating the world and how everything is going, and we're searching for the absolute, we're searching for the supreme somehow, or maybe we're looking for money, or maybe, you know, whatever. So different types of people come, and when they're confronted with this philosophy, then it's very analytical. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, father of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, he explained how to see this philosophy. He said, man's glory, he said, lies in his common sense. It lies in his common sense. So what it means is that the Vedas, they analyze this material world. They give us all the explanations, how it's working, how it's finite, how there's a spiritual reality which is infinite. But then it's up to us to make a decision on whether or not we want to apply any of these things. Just like this purport, it's very long. So it really comes down to, we read these things, do I really want to apply these things in my life? And to the degree that we apply them, Krishna says, he reciprocates. Yigitamam pravadyanti tamstataiva bhajami aham. Isn't it? As a person surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. we're always looking to blame somebody for our misfortune in this world. There's always somebody that's caused our misfortune. just like there's somebody that causes our good fortune. Right? So generally what happens is that we take credit for the good fortune and we blame somebody else for the misfortune. This is a conditioned nature. Everybody's a party to this. Just like if I lose something in my house, I always blame my wife. But there's a famous saying, they say, that men get married to women just so they can find things. Because women generally know where everything is. So we have this tendency to blame others. Our misfortune. This happened to me, that happened to me. If this hadn't happened, that had. And sometimes it's true from an external point. Yes, sometimes things happen to us because of other people. But on a higher platform, we're in this material world. We've come here. And now we can spend our life, arguing over why we came here. Prabhupada gives that example. He talks about the crow and tal fruit. Why did we fall to the material world? Is it because the crow landed on the tree and the fruit dropped off? Or was the fruit ripe and was going to fall anyway? What is it going to be? This is an example Prabhupada gives as to how the jiva fell from the spiritual world. So we can try to analyze and we can try to say, okay, it's like this or it's like that. But we're in the material world, we want to get out. And the best way to do that is to take to the process, to chant Hare Krishna sincerely, do service, and keep endeavoring, taking association with the devotees. Even though we may be struggling, we continue to take the association of the devotees. Devotees are very kind. They continue to give their association. And by doing that, gradually this understanding of how this material world is created, how it all comes into being, will gradually be understood. In this particular purport, it's talking about the essence of this material world, just like the example of the clay is given, how the clay transforms into so many things. In Christianity they say, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. That this material world creates so many different things. We know there are different material elements which create everything. Bhumi apana luvayo kamanu buddhiva chahankaraitya mebina prakriti ashtata. Eight, five gross and three subtle. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. These comprise everything that we see around us. And together, this is part of the creation. From these things, everything is created. So we can analytically study, just like this verse is doing, we can analytically study each one of these things, how it combines, how the senses come about, how they perceive these different things, how we're interacting with this material world. This is Sankhya Yoga, the analytical study of the nature of this material world. And by understanding that, we'll understand also how we're part of, how we're also entangled in that whole activity. But spiritual life is to try to understand how we've come into being part of that, how we've come to identify ourselves as part of those things. Each one of us struggles with that in some way or another, because we're thinking that to some degree or another, oh, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a husband, I'm a wife, I'm black, I'm white, I'm all the different dualities that come along with that. We struggle with that. At least I do. Don't know about you. But we struggle with these things. And we have some faith that if we keep following the process, even though we're fallen, that somehow the process will elevate us. Gradually. Of course, Srila Prabhupada gives the assurance that if in this lifetime we can chant Hare Krishna, do devotional service, follow the regular principles, that this can be our last life. And sometimes when you explain that to other persons who are studying philosophy, they become very skeptical. Become very, very skeptical. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find that example of one person who doubted that. And he became afflicted with some disease. He didn't have that faith. Who was it again? Was it the brother of Krishnadas Kaviraj? Remember? He became afflicted by this idea that it wasn't he thought that it wasn't possible just by the chanting of Hare Krishna to come to achieve liberation. And other philosophers, they find that hard to accept. Sometimes I find that hard to accept. I think, is this really going to work for me? We chant day in, day out, and we read these texts, and we think, is this going to work for me? And if we look back and we think of where we've come from, after some time, we can actually see that, yes, our life has become better for this chanting process. Who knows, maybe we wouldn't be alive today if we hadn't met the devotees of the Hare Krishna movement. Who knows what could have befallen us. So the process is very simple. We read Srimad Bhagavatam every day. We chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. We follow the four regulative principles. To the best of our ability, we try to understand this philosophy, continue to associate with the devotees. And then, at the end of our life, hopefully yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, we can remember Krishna at that vital point. You many times you find, I don't know if you've ever been with somebody as they're dying. Sometimes you may be with somebody who you've had some bad relationship with during your life. But at the point of death, it doesn't really matter anymore. All the little things that, you know, you've misgivings that you might have had, or even big misgivings. Because at the point of death, we all recognize it's a crucial juncture. We have to make an effort to help people. So at that point, everybody is ready to forgive everything, to help that person to overcome whatever temporary difficulties there may be with a passing. So why the association of devotees is so important, and why it's so important to maintain good relationships with the devotees, is because when that point comes in our life, we want to make sure that somebody else is there to help us in this process of passing from this life to the next. And studying the Bhagavatam, you know, doing service, all these things culminate in how to remember Krishna at the time of death. And undoubtedly, if you practice this process your whole life, or even some part of your life, you'll be benefited immensely. That will never go away. Krishna describes that benefit never ever goes away. It carries with you. Just like we've had our material baggage, we can also have some spiritual baggage, some spiritual credits. And it transports us ultimately to the spiritual world, back home, back to Godhead. So thank you very much. I'll just read this translation again. This perceivable world is identified with the Supreme because the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate foundation of all existence, remaining unchanged as all created things are generated from it and at last dissolved into it, just as clay remains unchanged by the products made from it and again merged with it. Thus it is towards you alone that the Vedic sages direct all their thoughts, words and acts. After all, how can the footsteps of men fail to touch the earth on which they live? Any questions, comments?
That was a wonderful class. I love this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's just one thing I find difficult to understand, some of the analogies. Like, the Lord is the original candle, and in human terms, a candle can't light by itself. And the Lord is a transcendental person. So I can't understand why is the Lord compared to a candle that were, you know, the original candle that lights all other candles.
Yeah.
If you could just comment on that.
Well, it's the example given on that, in that verse. I guess it's because we look towards light, and the example of light is used, that Krishna is the original light or the original source of that light. So I guess a candle is the thing that gives a good kind of analogy of it. Somebody may say, well, how's that original light about? But Krishna is the original effulgence. He's the original source of all illumination. So therefore, he lights up everybody else's life. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
I was just wondering about the significance of the last sentence of that men's feet. How is it possible for men to live without their feet touching the ground?
Shall we read it again?
Yeah,
that'd be good. Okay. Let us read the Prabhupada's. Okay. After all, how can the footsteps of men fail to touch the earth on which they live? Since I didn't touch on that point, I'm going to have to just reread it. Just as a man's footsteps, whether placed on mud, stone or bricks, cannot fail to touch the surface of the earth, so whatever the Vedas discuss within the realm of material generation, they relate to the absolute truth. Clear now?
Got it.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yes, we're right.
I have one comment and one question. My question is, Krishna entered the material world because we were all criminals with different desires, multiple desires. So we are put in one place, and Srila Prabhupada is giving us direction how to get out of this prison. That's my comment. My question is, when we preach to the younger generations, or in Bhakti Bhava class or Bhakti Shastri class, how do we define Krishna consciousness? It's a very big word, Krishna consciousness. How do we go to preach those people?
To relate everything, to relate everything back to Krishna.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, we say that everything comes from Krishna, and the example they use is love me, love my dog. So if you, and Prabhupada also gives the example of his shoes. He says, if you see my shoes, then you think of me. So everything that we see in the, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a chapter about Krishna's vibhutis, isn't it? Rasuhamabs kuntaya prabhashvi sasishurya prabhavasavavishvasabhikimpurishvamshvamshvam. You can see Krishna in the water. You can see Krishna as the sun and light of the moon. You can see Krishna as the ability in man. You can see all those things as reflections of Krishna's energy. So we don't necessarily always see Krishna directly, that Krishna consciousness. But we see we see how everything relates to Krishna. That's, there's no other way. It's not, you know, the classic example of, you know, when you first become a devotee and you think that around every corner Krishna's going to look around and go, peekaboo! You know, here I am! It's not quite like that. You know, Krishna consciousness is the consciousness of seeing Krishna everywhere and seeing Krishna in his energies. So therefore that's why we study all about Krishna's different energies, so we can identify them. Just like a small child can't necessarily identify heat, you know, the fire. So, but when it's taught about the fire, it understands that energy. Or, you know, when you grow up, you might know that this is the energy. You know, you plug this air conditioner in and it gives it a cold air. Or you put the heater in here and, you know, it gets warm. So we gradually get educated in all the different types of energies that exist. And then as you understand all the different types of energies, then you can relate them back to the energetic source. You know, just like if you have if you get electricity, you get an account. You know, you've got to pay the bill. So you know, okay, well, gee, there's a relationship between, you know, the electricity point and the people that send me the bill. You know, it seems that the two seem to be related. Right? So you get the understanding that there's one person that generates it, another one that's consuming it. So we're generally on the consuming end of those energies. But there's some point which, you know, has generated that. You know, just like those who are brahmanas, they meditate on the eye of the sun as being the source of all light, you know, as being Krishna. So that's a meditation. So when you meditate like that, you can see, oh, there's a relationship between the sun and God and me, how I'm, you know, getting that light. So the more we study this Sankhya section, the more we understand all the different types of energies of God, the more we can also relate them back to Him. You know, sometimes we take things and we don't know where they really came from. But when we study it more and more, then we can understand. Well, just like the grass is growing, you know, there's got to be rain and there's got to be the earth and there's got to be nutrients, and you know. And Krishna says, "Aham bija pratapita. I'm the seed-giving father of all living entities." We go, "Oh, okay. So everybody's related to me. So I don't really have to go to war with everybody because they're actually all my family." You know, simple things like that. That's how you see Krishna everywhere. Yes. Yes, we will.
I would actually know from Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, whoever comes back to the Godhead, you don't go back again to the material world.
Mm.
And contrary, when we see, when we're in the material world, we don't remember any of our past lives. So my question is, when we go back to Godhead, we still remember that once we are in the material world and now we came back here.
Yes.
Is there only we will say, okay, there is no point in going back because it was full of miseries and it's so blissful here. So we remember our past lives of material world when we go back to Godhead?
Yes. Krishna Prabhupada says, like a bad dream. But you know, even in this world, you find that you know, they've done some studies and they've seen that especially children between, you know, up to about the age of 6 or 7, many of them can remember their past lives, or there's many documented accounts of people who've had past life experiences. So you know, while we can remember maybe even up to one, or sometimes, you know, a couple of lives back, what's the value actually of remembering all those things? The basis of Krishna consciousness is not so much the remembrance of misery, but more the attraction of love. Because even while you're in the material world, you know, you may be a devotee, but you may experience misery. But that doesn't mean that you give up the process, because you understand that, yeah, there's difficulties. Right? Even in the material world, there's difficulties, but you continue on. You're still looking towards a higher goal. And that's why the verses there, the statement, you know, Krishna consciousness move in the positive alternative. It's a positive thing. Some religious processes, they always meditate on the negativity of this material world, why it's bad, this, that, and therefore we should go out. But actually, Prabhupada's statement is more that he gave us Krishna books so that we could become attracted by the higher reality of Krishna. Isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about experiencing a higher taste, we give up the lower taste. Param tushtani varatante. Vishaya vini varatante nirasraidinam. Okay, who knows the rest? Huh? Anybody know the next line? What are you guys all studying? But does that make sense?
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, well. How long am I? When am I supposed to go? Stop. Now.
Nine.
Oh, forget it. Yes, well.
Probably you were saying that Krishna is not only through bhakti, devotional service.
I didn't. Krishna says that. I just repeated his statement from Bhagavad Gita.
The other verse which he told in Bhagavad Gita that 4 types of people approach Krishna.
Yeah.
For various reasons. So then, how do they understand Krishna? Is people looking for wealth, or people are in distress, or how will they know Krishna?
Well, gradually they get some relief in the process of Krishna consciousness. There's some relief from some of these things. Just like if a person's hungry, you know, they can come to the temple, they can eat. At least that first distress point, which is hunger, is relieved. So then after they're relieved, they may look and feel some gratitude and want to do some service. And then as they do some service, their intelligence and their consciousness may become a little bit less dull, and they try to understand what's beyond just this anamoy, you know, just this eating propensity. So yeah, I mean, you know, Krishna consciousness, sometimes people are suffering on the material platform. It's not that the devotee should neglect anybody. You know, if people are, you know, suffering due to some material situation, you know, we don't say, oh, that's just your karma. We try to alleviate their suffering as well to the best of our ability. Sometimes we can't always do that. You know, sometimes people come and say, oh, you know, I need money or I need shelter, but they're not fit to live in the facilities that we have necessarily, or we don't have the facilities. So we try to give them some type of purification that will help them, that they can take away with them even. And therefore we distribute the chanting process, because by chanting, then what does that do? Chaitodhapanamarjanam, and it cleanses the dust from the heart, so that people gradually can become a little bit more aware of who they are, take a little bit more interest in themselves, and try to elevate themselves. Is that alright? It's not that a devotee, you know, that it just pops out of the sky. Krishna consciousness pops out of the sky. You have to actually work at it as well. So while somebody may be suffering, we also have to put in the effort. That's what I was saying before. Krishna says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. As we put in the effort to chant very nicely, without offences, and to do some quality service, you know, that means when we do something, we do it to the best of our abilities. We don't do it in a half-hearted manner. And we try to offer whatever we can to Krishna that's the best of everything. When we start to develop that mentality, then what happens is that some attachment arises. and from that attachment, gradually, you know, you start to get some taste. And when you get that taste, then gradually some love comes. And then that love becomes stronger and stronger. So that's all described, all the different stages. You know, we're really just at the really bottom of the rung of the ladder. Any other questions, comments? All right, Gantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Prabhupada, Ki Jai.